Okay, let's get started.
Whoa, wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 40 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioTU.com. And with me on the line from Melbourne once again, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, Bruce, I'm really well. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. I just found out I've got to fly to the Gold Coast tomorrow night, though, because my mum's not well. So.
Yeah, I heard. I'm sorry to hear that, mate. I hope everything works out.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I'll be back by Sunday night ready to upload podcasts. So.
I hope it all works out well for you. Yes, there's always something to do, but I hope it all works out well for you.
Thank you, mate. What are we going to cover this week?
Well, you know, we haven't talked about Flash in a little while, and there's just a few things that I wanted to, in case people had missed earlier podcasts, and, of course, maybe some new additions in this one. We don't talk about Flash a lot, and I've often given the impression in this particular podcast that I'm not a fan of Flash, and in a way, I suppose I'm not, but in a way, that's only because it's often abused. So I thought I'd just talk about a few ways of using Flash that we don't often think of, and perhaps avoid, you know, the use of it to the detriment of our photographs rather than, you know, their enhancement.
Sure.
And I'm actually at the end of this discussion with you, I'm going to send three photographs to you that you can upload on the site, showing the difference between a couple of very simple techniques to make the flash photography that we do look a lot more natural. And of course, I'm talking about, rather than using straight flash, and we talk about bouncing off the ceiling and bouncing off of, you know, white walls or white doors or other reflectors. And I'm, you know, very, very briefly, I'm sure that most of our listeners are familiar with the technique of bouncing, you know, using your flash and bouncing it off the wall or bouncing it, you know, off the ceiling. But I'm actually going to send three photographs to show the difference in how not only the photograph appears in terms of dimensionality, if that's a word, but also in terms of how it shapes a face. You know, if you bounce a flash overhead or if you bounce the flash sideways, how it will shape and alter and enhance the shape of a person's face, and, you know, make the photograph appear far more natural. And just simply what it means is that you flip the head of your flash upwards, you know, or sideways, depending on whether you're holding your camera horizontally or vertically, so that the light is directed off a white ceiling or off a white wall or other nearby white reflector, like a door that might be there, or you could even, you know, hold something large and white to reflect the flash off of. So many times our cameras come with these flip-up little flashes that, you know, flip up off the top of our SLRs or off the, you know, that are built into our compacts, and they just send light forward, which completely removes, you know, all. It makes a two-dimensional photograph completely two-dimensional because there's no, you know, shadow in the photograph to give us idea otherwise, other than the shadow behind the subject that might be sort of cast on a wall or something like that behind. So I'm just going to ask everybody to have a look at these three photographs, just see how important it is to, you know, and how easy it is to make a flash on top of our camera look natural. Now, actually, I'm not talking about our pop-up flash. I'm talking about an external flash. So if you have a digital SLR, if you have a film SLR, buy a flash that has both swivel and tilt. Your flash head might tilt upwards, but not swivel, which is a disadvantage because if the flash head tilts upwards, then you can only bounce off the ceiling, say, if you are holding the camera horizontally, which is probably wrong if you're doing a portrait. And vice versa, of course, if you are planning on holding the camera horizontally, but you want to bounce the flash sideways, you can't, you know, so you can't because it will only flip upwards. So buy a flash that has, you know, good swivel and tilt, that will even go right round behind you. Now, that technique is something that I've often used, where you turn the flash around so that it's actually pointing backward. If you get into the corner of a room that is painted, you know, white or near white or off white, you can actually use the corner where the ceiling meets two walls to be a very large you know, sort of like a brolly, a studio brolly, and you can actually throw light backwards, have it reflected into that corner, and bounce around and envelop your subject and become a very, very natural, you know, lighting technique. It requires a powerful flash to do so. So when you are buying a flash, also make sure that you have, you know, a fair bit of power in there as well. But most of us would probably know about basic flash techniques such as, you know, bouncing overhead or bouncing sideways and fill flash outdoors. Just as a note to those thinking of using fill flash outdoors, there is no magical formula for every situation you're going to be outdoors. If it's an overcast sort of day, I would presume that, I would suggest rather that we always just turn our flash down a little bit so that it doesn't overwhelm the photograph and make it look unnatural, but it does enhance the shadows a little, it does boost the color a little, and it does of course add a little bit of catchlight in the eyes, which, you know, always gives character to the face. If you're using fill flash on a very bright sunny day, you'll probably have to dial it up to, you know, fully auto, not full manual, but at least it's full auto setting so that it does have a little bit of impact in the picture, you know, and can actually just take a little bit of the harshness out of those shadows. But there's a couple of things I've been doing recently now that I've got my beautiful D200. It has ITTL, and I've been using a lot of off-camera flash. For instance, I was on a shoot this morning in a factory, and we didn't have a lot of time, but I didn't want to just use the lighting that was available in the factory. So I got my Nikon flash out, and I had one of the people who was on the shoot with me, advertising agency guy, stand away from the subject, and I wanted to illuminate this photograph in such a way just to add a little bit more lighting dynamics to it, because, as you know, factory lighting is overhead, it's halogen, it's boring, and it doesn't really have any interesting dynamics to it. So I used off-camera flash in the ITTL mode. Now, the way that works with the Nikon D200 is that you have a commander flash, which I have selected to be my little pop-up unit on my D200, and then of course you have your other flash, which is off camera and is fired, you know, ITTL and controlled from the camera. Now that's a beautiful, beautiful thing, because the camera's meter actually signals the flash and basically controls its exposure, so that you get illumination from the front from your little pop-up flash, but you also get illumination from the flash wherever you have positioned it. And I'm going to send a couple of examples of photographs where I've used off-camera flash so that you can see the advantage of using it with, you know, and without. The way that I use off-camera flash is to add just a lighting dynamic, perhaps a rim light or a backlight, to a subject that, you know, may not otherwise stand out from the background. I use that technique a lot because it actually adds a sort of an interesting, you know, dynamic and shape and lighting dynamic to the photograph that would otherwise not exist. And if you're a listener, go to the audio2u.com website and have a look at the examples I'm talking about, and you'll see what the flash has actually done to add impact to the image. The way that you can also control how the flash impacts upon your photograph is by varying not your aperture, but your shutter speed. Because the shutter speed will allow more ambient light, but because your flash is such an instantaneous burst, it won't really have much effect on what your flash does. So what you can do to control how much impact that off-camera flash, or indeed any flash that you use in your photograph, how much impact that has upon its outcome, is by varying your shutter speed. If you bring your shutter speed and your aperture to a point whereby they match the ambient exposure, in other words, they match the exposure that would occur if you didn't use flash, then the effect of your flash on that photograph may be somewhat minimal. It will have an effect, but it won't be, you know, as perhaps dynamic as it could be. That's not a bad thing. Your flash will just sort of fill in a little bit, maybe add a little bit of punch and color, and, you know, add a completely different sort of impact in those terms, but it won't necessarily appear to be an external lighting source as strongly as if you speed your flash up, not beyond the point of synchronization, of course, but only to the point, you know, whereby perhaps you are underexposing the ambient light and allowing your off-camera flash, or like I say, any flash, whether it's on your camera or off, to have its own impact upon your photographs. So my suggestion would be to all our listeners is to give that a little bit of a try. Set up a situation, maybe in a fairly well-lit room, a window-lit room or a fairly well-lit room. Set your camera up on a tripod and set your flash, you know, to even an auto exposure. And then vary your shutter speed, starting at a point of, you know, exposure that matches the ambient exposure, and then stopping your shutter speed down one stop for a few different frames. So that would mean making the shutter speed faster each time until you get to the point where it gets to the shutter speed that, you know, is your ultimate synchronization speed. It won't go any faster than that. And see the difference in how your flash, especially if you're using it off camera, see the difference in how that affects your photograph. Now, off-camera flash, in the case of the Nikon D200, is ITTL, but you needn't have that technology. There's been slave triggers around for a very long time, and a lot of flash guns actually have a slave sensor built in now, so that if you have two flashes, one on the camera and one, of course, off-camera, you can use that just as effectively also. If yours is a digital SLR, you'll just need to make sure that the flash that is either on camera or, you know, part of the camera, like the flip-up flash, doesn't actually have a pre-flash, which often establishes white balance, because that will trigger the other flash. By the time your exposure actually happens a split second later, that flash won't have time to recharge. But there are so many ways of triggering an off-camera flash. ITTL is one great new way, of course, but using the one flash to trigger the other as a slave, or even if you need to, if you have older equipment, you can use sync leads. It's still a great way to learn how to light things, how to make, you know, something that could be otherwise quite boring, quite interesting, by just adding an extra little light in there and placing it around to the side or even behind your subject. It's just a great way of learning how to use lighting and make things a little bit more interesting by using your little, you know, your little handheld flash. And finally, here's another experiment you can try. Set your white balance up so that it is set for tungsten. Go outside in late afternoon and put an orange or warm color filter over your off-camera flash, if you have an ITTL system. What will happen is you can take very dynamic looking photographs using this technique. What will happen is your photograph will appear cold because you've set your white balance to tungsten, which automatically makes it a little bluer than it should be because it compensates for the warmth of tungsten lighting. But if you underexpose your ambient exposure and set your flash up to be the main exposure for the photograph, and it fires using with a filter over it, like an orange or a warm sort of filter, it will compensate over the top of the white balance and illuminate your subject with correct or close to correct daylight. It's a very interesting technique. I haven't actually tried it yet. I've seen it done, but if I get a chance, I'll try and get a photograph uploaded also to show how this effect works. It's a brilliant new technique, of course, because it uses the digital aspect of, you know, that we're now using, something we didn't really, well, we had with film, but, you know, often didn't think of, but we have it on hand now by being able to alter our white balance in our cameras, and we can actually, you know, give it a bit of a try. I've seen it done. I'd suggest to our podcast listeners that they give it a try, but let's just try these other techniques first and have a look at the examples that I put up on the website to see how just throwing one little flash round to the side of an image can make a complete difference to how it appears and give it a little bit of extra dynamics. I've just used straight flash, but if you even added colored filters over the flash, you could even add further interest to your photograph. A lot of industrial photography uses, you know, gels over flash guns to make pictures look a lot more scientific or technological. You can do that very simply with a handheld flash and a bit of cellophane. These techniques are, you know, really quite interesting and can add very simply and very quickly, as I've said, interesting lighting dynamics to what might otherwise be a fairly boring sort of photograph.
Cool. Sounds very interesting, Shelton.
Well, let's give it a try, Bruce.
Yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Give it a try. And as I say to our listeners, send in your examples. If you've gone out and given it a bit of a try, send in your examples so we can see what you're doing.
Well, mate, I must admit, they've all been slack. It's been a week and a half now, and we've still not seen any submissions on the depth of field experiment.
Yeah, no, we haven't. What are we going to do about that, Bruce?
Mate, I think we just shut up shop and go home.
Yeah, because obviously nobody's listening.
Obviously.
Yeah, we're just talking to ourselves here, mate. Making ourselves feel important.
All right, mate.
No, everybody, please give that lesson in lenses a try. It is very important to you to know how lenses and depth of field affect your pictures.
Absolutely. I'm really disappointed because I've been out and actually done it a couple of times, but have not been able to get the photos off my camera successfully because I'm having issues with the USB ports on my motherboard. I will eventually get those off and uploaded. So,
well, I look forward to seeing them when you do them again, mate. It is a great lesson. And also try these flash techniques. I'm going to send some photographs that you can see what I'm talking about.
Cool. All right, mate. We'll talk to you in a week.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Thanks, Sheldon. See ya.
See you soon. Bye.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Audio2U delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear
when you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
Audio2U.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
control D to bookmark.
Audio2U.com.